Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. The Lakers win streak snapped by the San Antonio Spurs. No LeBron James in action, and the Lakers not able to overcome that. We'll talk a little bit about it. Luka tried his best. A big night from him. We also got to talk about a center of concern now for the Lakers. We'll get into DeAndre Ayton and the future. Plus, we'll be taking your questions and comments. Happy to see you all here. Coming in, Jason, Jovan, happy to see you guys here. Jovan, I know you're still dealing with that illness that you've got right now, so thank you for gutting it out and playing hurt here for the team.
Had to do it. The Lakers are having to cobble it together right now with some G League level guys out there. I'm trying to do the same.
Well, we're happy to have you out here somehow gutting it out and getting through this one. Jason, I guess let's just jump right into it. As soon as it was announced that LeBron was not playing, I think optimism that the Lakers could finally beat a team with quick, athletic perimeter players dropped significantly. That said, I wasn't too disappointed, at least with the effort level for most of the team last night. How did you feel about the Lakers game against the Spurs?
Yeah, you know, I left the game pretty encouraged on a lot of things. At first, my initial reaction when I saw the LeBron news was disappointment, just because I thought it would have been kind of an opportunity for the Lakers to get kind of a signature win. Mm-hmm. But I tried to back away from it and see the bigger picture in the sense that, one, LeBron's been playing really well. And so I think it's kind of important for the Lakers to make sure that he survives this. And it was their fourth game in six nights. They have another game on Friday before having a couple days off. So essentially what you allowed LeBron to do is play the Milwaukee game with 2 days off before and 2 days off after. It's a nice little kind of easy break for LeBron to help him kind of make sure that he survives this. Because we need Austin to come back and this version of LeBron to be there for the Lakers to reach their ultimate potential. So I was like, okay, it is what it is. From there, I just wanted to see how Luka looked, and I thought he was fantastic. Like, Here's the thing, guys. Like, I thoroughly did not expect Nick Smith Jr. and Dalton Knecht to be able to score against Victor Wembanyama. And honestly, it was kind of funny watching them try. That first half shift was an abomination. I didn't really have any interest or concern with the Lakers winning that game. It just was going to be impossible under the circumstances. But one of the things that I've talked about a lot over the course of the last couple of weeks is this idea that Luka Doncic is the leader of this team, and he has to set the tone with his play in a way that instills a belief in the team that they can win. And there have been a lot of games against this type of team, really good teams with great perimeter defenders that have rim protection, that Luka's been bad in the first quarter, and the team has taken like a 10-12 point lead in the first, you know, 5 or 6 minutes, and it kind of feels like they're digging uphill the entire game, and it's just really difficult to come back. This was the exact opposite of that. I thought Luka came out and played. I thought that first half was one of the best halves he's played all season. I thought he was absolutely amazing. Even as we dig into like things that I've been critical of, like turnovers and missed threes, this particular setting, you got to give him a pass for that, because there's a lot of situations where he had to say yes when other nights he can say no, meaning like when no one else on the team can dribble and there's a low percentage pass, but it gives you a layup, he kind of has to throw that pass. When no one else on the team can dribble, he's going to have to take some bad step back threes. Yeah, when LeBron and Austin are on the floor, maybe move it around a little bit. But like I didn't care about the turnovers and missed threes last night. I thought Luka was absolutely amazing. And just seeing him have an absolutely amazing game against that caliber of opponent, I thought was a big just bellwether or sign that he's starting to gain some momentum. And honestly, like, if the team didn't completely soil themselves in the first quarter the way they did, they might have built a little lead and been up 10, 12, 13 points and had a chance. But like, they couldn't stop fouling. We literally talked in yesterday's show about how you have to be on time against San Antonio or you will foul. And they were late the entire first half and just out of position, fouls, turnovers, sloppiness, can't even make a high post entry. Like, Luka stuck out like a sore thumb as the most competent Laker by a mile yesterday. I thought that was an encouraging sign for when the team gets healthy.
It reminded me of what we saw from Luka in Eurobasket. It reminded me of Luka playing with Slovenia. That's what it looked like out there. And by the way, I did think it was a great game from Luka. It was not a great game from the other guys. There were some guys who had their moments. I thought they played hard, but you know, there were moments that struggled. For example, through three quarters, 0 points scored with Luka off the floor. That can't happen. That's atrocious. 0 points scored through three quarters with Luka off the court was absolutely horrific.
I think there was a lineup. I think that the lineup to start the second quarter was DeAndre Ayton, Maxi Kleba, Dalton Connect, Nick Smith, and Gabe Vincent. And I was like, what is this lineup?
And even that, I had somebody on my show last night who said, I would have expected at least Marcus Smart to be in the mix. So like Marcus Smart on whenever Luka's off. And I'm like, just to have a little bit more crazy, but it was like JJ got Gabe back. So Gabe is going to solve that problem and he's going to go out there and, get in great cardio. But this was a game where we expected the loss. My only point of frustration really with this game, because I thought Luka played great. I think Jason, you were spot on with what you said about him. I loved what we saw from him. I thought from a leadership perspective, he was fantastic. I thought he really stepped up in this one. But my biggest point of frustration was that this was winnable, right? Like as this game was going on, it was like, oh shit, the Spurs are having their outlier bad 3-point shoot. They were awful shooting the ball. The fact that it was a winnable game because the Spurs shot the ball so poorly, and part of that was I thought the Lakers were competitive. They put an effort on the defensive side of the ball, but the Spurs also had an outlier poor shooting game, particularly from behind the arc. The fact that that game was there for the taking makes it a little bit more frustrating that they weren't able to find a way and get that kind of statement win. But again, it was not expected to be a win going into the night. Jovan, we'll talk about the center position quite a bit in a little while, but what were your thoughts on the game overall?
I'll take it a step further. I think if LeBron and Austin play in this game, the Lakers win this game. I thought, with how they played and the players that did show up, how those guys performed. I do want to highlight, I thought Jake and Jackson both showed up. I thought Jackson was their best center. I know we're going to touch on the center position in a little bit, but he outscored and out-rebounded DeAndre Ayton in 11 fewer minutes. And I thought he looked much more comfortable against Wemby than DeAndre Ayton did. And then Jake had a stronger second half compared to the first half. He missed a bunch of open threes that were some momentum shots that any of those go down, it's maybe a different game. Like there was the one sequence where Luka drives, he throws up like the little 8-foot floater, misses it. I think the Lakers get a steal or an offensive rebound, kick it to Jake on the right wing. He misses an open three, and like that was the game. They were down like 10 with 4 minutes left. Either one of those goes down, it's, I think, more competitive down the stretch. But my biggest thing, like to just continue what Jason was saying, was that I felt like the Lakers weren't really physically overwhelmed in this game. And part of it was like, yes, in the bench minutes with Nick Smith and Dalton Connect and Maxi Kleba, like those guys should not be playing in this matchup. But I thought like for the first time in quite a while, maybe since like the first couple weeks of the season, I thought the Lakers played one of these types of teams and like actually held their own and were competitive for like a majority of the game. And again, doing so shorthanded, like Luka did whatever he wanted in that first half. And there was the one play where Wemby blocked him, which was just an incredible, like Wemby's arm is down as Luka is rising to shoot the ball. And he's still able to pin it against the backboard, which is just a testament to Wemby's brilliance. But outside of like that in like a couple of stops they had, I mean, 14 of their 16 field goals in the first half were directly from Luka, either scoring or assisting. And I thought one of the craziest stats from the evening was, so 10 guys played like rotation minutes, all 10 guys attempted at least 3 field goals. Only 2 guys shot 50% or better, Luka and Jackson Hayes. Everybody else shot under 50%, including like a Maxi Kleba going 0-for-3. And, DA was 4-for-9, and just like guys were missing everything. So despite it being a rock fight, despite it being a brick fest, LA was competitive. And I think we also saw, and now have a little bit of a growing sample size here of, we've had the conversations of like, what if they inserted a defender into the starting lineup? Some people have even gone as far as saying, what if you bench LeBron or bench Austin and go with 2 defenders in the starting lineup? And we've now seen iterations of that, obviously not with LeBron or Austin coming off the bench, but like it has helped the defense. The Lakers have been much better defensively over this stretch. It's just they cannot shoot or score consistently when it's not coming from one of the stars. So I think like that's the next thing for them to figure out in terms of like the next month on the trade deadline is I think that you need to find that two-way balance, and like a couple of these guys make sense within that. But certainly if you're like four defenders are Jake, Smart, Vando, and Gabe, you don't have enough collective offense or shooting from that quartet. You need to upgrade, I think, a couple of those spots.
It's a matter of finding the right balance out there. And of course, upgrading some of those will have to come by the trade deadline, which is coming up on February 5th. We did see one move take place in the NBA last night. Of course, 5 minutes before tip-off for the Lakers game. Thanks a lot, Shams. But it's Trae Young going to the Washington Wizards for not a lot. CJ McCollum and Corey Kispert heading back. A lot of contractual situations going on there. But talking about the defense and how the Lakers have looked since putting Jake LaRavia in the starting lineup, Jake averaging in the last since joining the starting lineup for this stint here, which happened on December 30th, Jake's averaging 15.4 points, 52% from the field, 38% from three on 6.4 attempts. The three-point attempts going up, 82% from the free throw line, six boards, 2.6 offensive rebounds. Out of those six rebounds, 2.6 offensive rebounds plus two steals. I think he's done pretty well in there. And I also want to call attention to the Lakers in last night's game for the, I believe it's third game in a row. They actually won the fast break point battle, and they have not been a high corner three generating team on the season. They've been in the bottom third in the NBA in that, but they more than doubled, or I'm sorry, they doubled their output from corner three in terms of volume in last night's game as well. So I think they did. There were some positive signs, and there are some positive signs from this team, even though they did come up with the loss in this one. Jason, where are you at with all of this moving forward now with this club? Are there things that they're building upon here? And Rui's going to come back maybe Friday. We'll see. Does JJ do it? Does he put him back in the starting lineup or what happens here?
Yeah, well, there's always because Austin is out, there's that extra starting spot that he can tool around with to where he could theoretically put Rui and Marcus out there. So I would never put it past JJ. But at this point, I think there's been so much data that if you don't start the Milwaukee game in particular with Marcus and Jake alongside Luka and LeBron, I think that would be a mistake. I love the point you made about the corner threes. I think that was an underrated part of the job that Luka did last night. I thought Luka just did a wonderful job manipulating San Antonio's defense throughout the game and making those corner skips. You know, there's this thing that happens with Luka where if he is as surgical as a scorer as he's capable of being, it does literally force the defenses to behave in such an unnatural way that the good looks just flow from there. I mean, he drew a double team underneath his own basket.
That was insane. Like, that was insane. 94 feet from the basket, they doubled him. How often do you see that?
It's so unbelievable. And like the thing that I think has been coming back for him that's been key, because the three is still not there, but his short range shot making has been absolutely ridiculous as of late. He is 11 for his last 16 on jump shots inside of 17 feet. 11 for his last 16. He's making more than two-thirds of his floaters this season. When he's at his best, he keeps working into that close range and just scoring, 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 drawing fouls, scoring, drawing fouls. And teams have no choice but to send the kitchen sink at him. That's when it starts unlocking everything on the weak side. And what I get excited about with this Lakers team, in terms of this team's potential, and again, we all have talked about their limitations against the top, top, top competition in this league. But if they're competing with the level of effort that they've competed with over the last week and a half, and they have better lineup balance, meaning more athletic defenders in each lineup, so even though we agree they don't have a ton of it overall, if just more in each lineup and bolstered through a trade potentially down the line. And then third, you have this combination of elite top-end shot creation. Guys, you saw the perfect example last night that still, to this day, the greatest equalizing force in the NBA is a top-tier superstar playing at the peak of his powers. When a dude is doing that, It makes every game winnable, regardless who's on the floor with you. And that's why we've been talking about that with Luka. Is like, there are guys at the league in the at the top of the league, namely Shea and Jokic, who basically do that every night. Not necessarily to that extent, but somewhere in that territory. And so if Luka's doing that, and you have this version of LeBron, and you can get Austin back, and you can get him doing what he's capable of doing, and you have the competitiveness and energy and effort that they've had in the last week and a half, and you have better lineup balance, that's the best version of this Lakers team. And we haven't really seen that yet this year, and I just want to see what it looks like.
Jovan, your thoughts on what that can mean for you, for Luka moving forward here?
Well, I mean, I still think the best version of this team is going to have to come through some sort of trade. But I think JJ is in a really interesting spot here with Ruby potentially coming back on Friday and what he chooses to do. I feel like this is a situation where if there ever was a way to sort of build this as like, hey, we're in a certain rhythm right now, we're playing a certain level of defense, and sort of pitch it to Ruby of, at least come off the bench for like the first couple games. Let's see how it goes. Let's see how you feel. Then we can reevaluate. This is that scenario. And if he comes back and he just goes straight back into the starting group, then I do have a little bit of concern, which is like, unless they're making again a bigger trade or potentially even trading Rui, I have a little bit of concern with just how JJ views the starting group and the overall rotation, because I think unequivocally, like, they've looked much better with two-way balance, and we've talked about the general structure of like two offensive-minded guys, two defenders, and a big man. And I think those lineups have largely looked pretty good during the last, you know, 5 to 6 games. And I think that should continue at least until Austin's back. When Austin comes back, obviously, I think goes back to the big three plus Ayton, and then whoever is that fifth guy. But I'm really intrigued to see what they do, because I have liked how things have looked from that perspective over the stretch. They just got to make shots. And yeah, outside of LaRavia, again, with the Banshees or defenders, I don't know if you can, like, I think Vando's 1-for-11 in his last few games on threes. He's sort of regressed. The finishing's been a little bit better. By the way, as an aside, Vando had like the worst start to a game I can remember a player having. He turned the ball over on the first possession,
on the first pass,
then gets two immediate fouls, also gives up an offensive rebound on a free throw, and then gets pulled 2 minutes in the game. And it was like, it was a pretty rough Vando performance. But in general, I like the way that things are trending. I just, let's see with JJ, because Gabe came back, immediately played 18 minutes. He was on an 18-minute restriction. He played all 18 minutes. And I think is going to continue to play more. So we'll see. But I think the ball is in JJ's court in terms of if he has any autonomy or any, if this has been a political move to some degree, now's the time to pull the plug. Now's the time to shift it. We'll see if he does.
Yeah, because it's undeniable what needs to happen. There's no getting away from that. So I do hope that we'll see that shift. And again, it's not about Rui not being good. I think Rui is very important for this team. I think you just need to balance out these lineups a bit more. You need Rui coming off the bench, and you roll forward from there. We do need to talk. Let's just get into it. We'll rip the Band-Aid off here. DeAndre Ayton. I thought the Lakers, for to a man, competed, with the exception of DA. It was just another low energy performance. And the problem we continue to have with DeAndre Ayton is these games where you need him to scale up, these games where you need him to, hey, there's no Austin, there's no LeBron tonight. Luka needs somebody to roll with him tonight. Tonight, we need you to step up. Tonight, we need the extra bit from DeAndre Ayton. Tonight, we need a 15-12 night plus, if not more, maybe a 20-15 night out of DeAndre Ayton. Instead, you got kind of DA on a nice little stroll down the path. He punched the time clock. It was a 9-to-5. He did his job, and then he went home. You didn't get that big extra performance out of him. And now that's become a consistent thing. We saw Christmas Day against the Rockets. Hey, DA, you got a big matchup tonight. You got to battle Steven Adams. You got to get in there and fight with Alper and Sengun. You need a big game out of you. Nah, 2 rebounds. Hey, now you got Durant. You got to go dealing with him. And the Detroit Pistons, a really good offensive rebounding team, you got to deal with that. Really need you to step up. Nah, two rebounds. Hey, San Antonio, here's a chance. Statement win. They're shooting terribly. Let's go, DA. I'm just going to kind of cruise along here and do my thing. Let me know when it's time to go home when the clock hits 5 p.m. And that's been his thing over the course of his career. But I think we're at a point now where we can question, like, is this going to be the long-term fit? And I think stylistically, is it the long-term fit alongside Luka Doncic and Austin Reeves-led team? I think the DA that we saw in November that was scoring at an extremely high rate, that his efficiency was through the roof, you could go, man, well, if you're getting this from him offensively, maybe you can squint and find a way to make this work. But the version of DeAndre Ayton that we've seen more recently, simply not been it for the Lakers. So is this a short-term one-year stop for DA? Jason, what are you seeing out of him? I know all three of us were pretty frustrated with him last night.
I think it's important to frame this conversation in the context of this season and the future, meaning like everything we're saying right now doesn't change the fact that for $8 million, this is way better than anything else.
100%.
Gotten. So like, I think it's important to understand that like it was so worth it for the Lakers to try with DeAndre Ayton. And unless he brings back a starting caliber center in a trade, he needs to be on this roster until the end of the mm-hmm. season, at least. That is, I think, an important piece of context to add there. That said, we have seen just way too many examples, because the question is, what does DeAndre Ayton look like in terms of the future of the center position for the Lakers? And as I look at it, I think we have more than enough evidence already to this point that he's flat out just not competitive enough for the job. He doesn't have enough of a willingness to fight, for lack of a better term, especially against better competition, to have any chance. I was texting you guys in our group chat last night. Like, can you imagine Ayton for 7 games against a Wemby or against a Jokic or against a Chet or a Hartenstein or against a Zubats or against any of these guys? He's going to get his ass kicked. And he'll sit there and take it because he just doesn't have that, oh, I'm getting kicked, let me get up and fight thing that you need to have in these sorts of situations. So then we got to like zoom out a bit and be like, do we know who the small forward of the future is for the Lakers? No. Do we know who the power forward is for the future of the Lakers? No. Do we know who the center of the future for the Lakers is? No. Now, we know that LeBron is more than capable of being the starting power forward for at least the rest of this season and probably next year too. So you have some time to figure that spot out. So I left last night thinking, and I don't want to pitch it yet because I want to get into the bigger picture topic with you guys first, and then we can kind of circle back to some ideas. But I think we need to open up our perspective in this deadline to, if a trade brings back a starting caliber center of the future for the Lakers, it's every bit as valuable as a trade for a Herb Jones. I think that's the way we've got to change our perspective going into this deadline. I think that's been clear to me from what we've seen from Ayton to this point.
Yovan, where are you at on DA? Are you in agreement that maybe it's time to start considering adding a big man at the deadline?
Yeah, I'm there. And it's crazy because I don't remember doing like a 180 on a situation as quickly as I feel like I have the last couple of weeks. Like right before Christmas, I had I did a mailbag where someone asked me, like, I think Ayton could be the long-term fit for LA? And I said, yeah, he could be. Like, it depends on mm-hmm. how the rest of the season goes. Like, I think he's obviously outperformed his contract, and he's probably been like an A- on the season that was up to that point. And I was like, but it depends how the rest of the season goes. If he's an A- in the regular season, but he's like a B or B- in the playoffs, then all of a sudden you have questions about, does he fit, or what does that next contract look like? But that was right before the Houston game. And then he followed up the Houston game with the Detroit game. And then I started actually going through it because I hadn't really been like keeping track of this in my head. And I started noticing that this is not objective. This is more subjective. But in my opinion, I'm going to list out his 5 best games of the season and his 5 worst games of the season. And we'll see if there's some trends with them. So in my opinion, in no order, 5 best performances were against the Pelicans, the Kings, the Suns, the Blazers, and the Spurs. I think the Spurs one was like his clearly that was the first win they had against the Spurs. I thought he outplayed Wemby, and that was, in my opinion, like his best performance against an elite opponent. His five worst games of the season: OKC, Detroit, Houston, this last San Antonio game last night, I'm putting in that bottom five, and then the Atlanta game where I thought he was a disaster in that first half. That was also on the same OKC road trip. So four of those five teams are four of the maybe the four best teams the Lakers have played this season, and he was close to a no-show in basically all of them. And I think there is a clear trend that I think he's performed much better against lottery teams than against bad defensive teams compared to the better teams. And last night was a perfect example of no Austin, no LeBron, no Rui. If there was ever a game for DeAndre Ayton to be featured more, if there was ever a game for DeAndre Ayton to get up 15 to 20 shots and have a vintage Suns performance of 25, 30, even 30 plus points, last night was that type of game. And instead, he goes 4 for 9, 9 points, 6 rebounds. I thought Luke Kornet, forget Wemby, I thought Luke Kornet was outplaying him, out hustling him, pushing him around. I just thought it was a really rough performance. And it's great that he can play the Pelicans and the Kings and the Jazz and the Blazers and have big performances against those teams. And some of those games have carried his statistical numbers, but his performances against the best teams have been pretty discouraging up to this point. And with the exception of the Spurs game, I think they've largely been duds and not been what LA has needed. So I am a bit concerned at this point of just like how he fits long term. I don't really know the answer.
I think that when we look at DA and his, you know, potential fit with this team, I think two things are true. As I think we've hit upon, that he's worth the contract that he's on. I think it would be a positive if he picks up his player option for next year. I also don't think he is the long-term solution at the center position. He's giving you bang for your buck, but if he is stepping up and having these big games like he did against San Antonio the very first time around when they got the win over the Spurs, if he's having those kind of big games, then the fit concerns, you can mitigate those to a degree. When he's not doing that, that's where the fit concerns become a bigger problem, because realistically, we talk about building a team, whether it's Luka, LeBron, and Austin, or just Luka and Austin in a post-LeBron future, the bottom line is whoever else is on the floor with them, and this goes back to our balancing the lineup conversation, has to be somebody who does all the other stuff, does the dirty work, hustles, rebounds, block shots, all of that, high motor, all of those things. That's what you're looking for out there. If Ayton is putting up those 20 and 15 performances or whatever, then him not doing those other things, you can kind of ignore it a little bit, right? But long-term, if you're not going to get that out of Ayton in the big performances, and that's what you need from the other players on the court, whether it's a big or a wing, it's tough to see the fit. Now, I do think that with what you're looking for, let's say they do replace Ayton. Let's say that February 5th, they make a trade and it's for a center. You're looking for somebody who can still positively impact the defense. It's the same conversation as the wing position, just in a different way in terms of what they're actually going to bring out there on the floor. You're looking for somebody who can make up for the defensive shortcomings of some of the other players around them, and through non-scoring activities can make a big impact out there on the court. So, Jason, what do they do in this situation? Should they be looking to potentially move Ayton by the February 5th trade deadline? And if they do, or at least move on from and move to someone else, and if they do, who are the players that should fit the mold of what they're really looking for?
Yeah, so this is interesting, because I think it's going to be hard to accomplish through the draft, especially under their circumstances where they're going to win plenty of regular season games and they don't have all their picks, right? So you kind of have to look around the league. I wrote down six names of guys that are realistically trade-forable-ish, that are what I would consider to be starting caliber centers in the league. You have Domantas Sabonis, who I don't think would be a good fit. It's like interesting, but not a good fit. I don't think he solves too many problems. I think him and Luka would find a way to be great on offense, but that'd be it. There's Walker Kessler, who there's like the, is Danny Ainge just going to want an arm and a leg for him? And then also the injury history with him is starting to get a little tricky. There's Nikola Vucevic, who I actually think in the short term would be fascinating. I just don't think he makes sense as a long-term fit. Like the idea of a pick and pop five alongside Luka is kind of interesting. Then you basically have Nick Claxton, Daniel Gafford, and Robert Williams. And Robert Williams, there's health stuff. I almost prefer to look at him as a backup option. And for the record, I think Jackson is fine as a backup. I don't think that's the issue. I think it's more that starting spot. And then Gafford, you have the, is Dallas ever going to do a trade with the Lakers again? As well as, I think he's fine, but I don't necessarily think he's the best option. So what I keep coming back to is Nick Claxton. And so Brooklyn, they've got all these young dudes because they took a million first round picks last year. And they've got a couple of athletes on the roster that don't necessarily fit into their future. And so what I put together is, what if you called up Brooklyn and you offered Rui and Ayton? So you can, I think it makes sense to include Ayton if you're getting a center back. If you're not getting a center back, you can't just use Ayton as filler because then Jackson's your starter. But if you include Rui and DeAndre Ayton, Gabe Vincent and Maxi Kleba, in a first round pick, and you got back Nick Claxton, who's your 27-year-old starting center, presumably for the future, which fits the scheme pretty well as a guy who can do some switching. He's actually anchored multiple elite defenses over the years, most recently this Brooklyn Nets team, but even in past years, like the Cam Johnson, Mikal Bridges Nets to the Kevin Durant Nets. Like, he's had multiple iterations of defenses where he's been the consistent through line and where he's been great. And then you get a guy like Zaire Williams, who I know Brooklyn doesn't view in their long-term plans, and a guy like Terrence Mann, who's kind of an iffy contract. And so that essentially is the asset advantage. If you're the Lakers, you're including a first-round pick, and you're taking on an iffy contract in Terrence Mann. But what you're getting is the starting center for the future, and then two athletes that I think both can play minutes in this rotation. Zaire Williams was closing the game as the primary point of attack defender for Brooklyn last night on Desmond Bane, and sliding his feet and moving and doing his job. And Terrence Mann, he's a flawed player, and he's not as locked in on the details as he was when he was early in his career with the Clippers, but he's athletic. He's added some ball handling ability. He's shot the ball okay on catch and shoot threes this year. I just think that would be a kind of a roster balancing trade that would give the Lakers a clear starting five for the future and a couple of athletes in their rotation. And I think they're relatively achievable trade targets.
Jovan, would you be in favor? Does that clear the bar to trade the first round pick?
I really like Nick Claxton, and the Lakers and the Nets have a history of making trades over the last few years. I think he fits more naturally as a lob threat than DeAndre Ayton. And I think if you are committing to Luka and a center as like the bread and butter of your offense, which obviously that is sort of the nature of a Luka-led offense, then I think Claxton is a better pick and roll lob threat, and fits more with what Luka is looking like. He's more in that Jackson Hayes mold offensively in terms of his finishing. And then defensively, I really like the versatility there. I think he is a high motor defender. He can switch out onto perimeter players. He does have the rim protection and the rebounding. So yeah, I mean, I think, outside of him, I don't really know who would make sense during like this trade cycle. I think the Lakers would then have to probably go into the summer and sort of figure it out then. Mm-hmm. But they're in an interesting spot because a lot of teams are set up at the center spot, and not like that is, you know, there's been some buzz over the past, I think, sort of before the Clippers started to play a little bit better, of like, would they consider trading Ivica Zubac, right? Someone like that. But I like, that's someone I would easily give up a first round pick. Sure. It would be sort of ironic to trade back for Zubac, but now like Clippers are playing better. They're still trying to get into the play-in mix and try to be a back end playoff team. And like, I don't know if that would be someone they would really consider trading. And like, size has become more valuable again, as we've seen teams shift toward, like, you know, Jokic being the best player in the league, and Wemby, and the double big looks in OKC and Houston. And like, there's just this need for size that it's at a premium, similar to needing also 3-and-D wings. So LA's, I think, in a tough position trying to like figure that out long term. And look, maybe DeAndre Ayton plays better the rest of the season and he turns things around and has some big performances against some of the better teams. But up to this point, it's sort of like, I think he's had some pretty disappointing performances in some of these big losses, and I would like to see him perform better against that caliber of opponent.
Yeah, agreed. I think it's a challenge. Like, It's a challenge in that the two of the more interesting centers who could be on the market to varying degrees, Ivica Zubac and, you know, maybe Daniel Gafford, someone like that, are with two teams that almost certainly would not trade with the Lakers, right? Simply because of optics, the Mavs. Good Lord, could you imagine if they turned around and traded again with the Lakers? And then the Clippers, we know, are only going to trade with the Lakers if they are fleecing them like they did when they got Ivica Zubac the first time around. So that, I think, makes it a little bit of a challenge. Nick Claxton is an interesting option. We talked about him a lot this past summer. Ultimately, they wound up getting DeAndre Ayton. I still love the value with DeAndre Ayton's contract. I don't think they have to make that move right now, but I like Jason's approach to, hey, if we're going to go spend the bulk of, like, our biggest, most valuable trade chip right now, that first round pick, that is going to go out. If that's primarily going to be used with the majority of the value being spent on a center, that you also add some players who can give you something on the perimeter defensively, and Zaire Williams and man. So I do like that concept, because I don't think you can get both the things the Lakers need with just one first round pick. And that's a true locked in starting level wing and a center. In addition to, I think they could use a point of attack guard here as well. But Jason, your deal is able to check some of these boxes here while getting maybe some undervalued players on the perimeter, in addition to the big. And then Nick Claxton, you would just have as your long-term fit at the five. Do you like the pairing of Nick Claxton and Jackson Hayes? That's kind of a like-for-like combo.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the specific details there that you would think of as a weakness potentially is strength. Uh-huh. But if you're fast, those are some of the things that, like, in the short term, LeBron can help with, but also Luka can help with. Luka can do some of that, like, strongman stuff, like helping on defensive rebounding, which is a little bit of a weakness for Nick Claxton. Although I think the fact that he switches as much as he does kind of affects his defensive rebounding, because he will end up on the perimeter more than a lot of bigs will. But again, like, the Lakers aren't going to form a perfect basketball team overnight. And, you know, like, maybe you do end up in the next couple of years opting for a different type of backup center that gives a different look than a Jackson Hayes, if you needed more muscle, for example, or something along those lines. And then kind of as I look at the big picture, because we agree there's three starting positions that they need to address in the next few seasons, but LeBron gives you essentially a year and a half now to figure out the four, right? So you have some time there. And then the three, like, the Lakers actually have some dudes who can do an okay job in that spot right now, between Jake LaRavia and Marcus Smart. Again, I think Terrence Mann could play some minutes there. A guy like Zaire Williams could play some minutes there. Also, you do theoretically have a young guy in the pipeline to where it's potentially possible that 2 years from now, a guy like Adu Thierro could play minutes at the three or something along those lines. So again, I look at it as the other thing I kept thinking about last night, let me know if you guys agree with this. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that a Herb Jones is very much a ceiling raising type of player for the Lakers in terms of his ability to be a primary point of attack defender. But like, would having a guy like Nick Claxton dramatically raise the Lakers' floor defensively and athletically, just by having a big who runs the floor well, who can raise the floor of the defense to a certain level? Obviously, they'd still have their limitations, matchup specific at the top of the West, but does a Nick Claxton or a rim protecting center that really kind of gives a defensive foundation, is that the kind of thing that could make the Lakers better in terms of their floor?
I think so. I think if you actually look into DA's rim protection numbers, they've been solid this year. And I think all things considered, he's done about as well as, like, reasonably expected just based on his prior track record. But I do think that he is someone that I think he's more someone that if you had elite defensive talent, he could fit into that system and scheme and be respectable in it, but he's not someone that, to your point, is necessarily going to raise your floor defensively and play with a certain motor or impact on a nightly basis, I think. And that's something that I think we've seen, where, like, the floor can fall out against some of these opponents when the Lakers sort of get sped up or physically overwhelmed and everything is sort of going wrong. DA can sometimes play into that, I think, and not really stop it, where I think someone who's a more a better, higher ceiling defender like a Claxton or someone of that ilk, I think just gives you like a baseline foundation with your nightly defense that sort of regardless of what else is happening, you know, you can rely on him defensively to a degree that I don't think that, you know, it's the same with DA. So, yeah, I mean, if you somehow got like Claxton and Herb Jones, I mean, that does dramatically change this team. I just think at that point you probably are emptying the clip. And I don't even know I don't think you can get both of those guys because you only have one first round pick to trade.
What do you think is easier to get? Like, if you have the option, let's say, dream scenario, the Lakers have the option to get one or the other of Claxton or Herb Jones. Rob Pelinka has two deals. They're probably not the same deal, but two deals sitting in front of him on February 5th, and he's got to make a decision.
Just imagining the Joe Dumars.
Right, yeah, he's got two phones, and he's on the line, and Rob's got to make a decision there. Which position is easier to fill over the summer? Is it the wing or the big?
That's a good question.
I would prioritize Herb Jones. I think this has been a weakness for the Lakers for a half decade. So I'm going to reiterate, like, size is important. Size has become more prioritized over the last few years as there has been a league-wide shift with some trends, but I feel like there's ways to draft. We've seen like some recent rookies or second year guys really pop as centers in a way that, like, I think you could potentially draft or acquire one. I think it's much harder to find a like starting level 3-and-D guy, and the teams that have those guys and have like I mean, how many of the Spurs players could help the Lakers last night and just this army of two-way perimeter wings and guards that you know, it's like, okay, Stephon Castle picks up a couple fouls against Luka, okay, let's put Sohan on him, or let's put Champagne on him, and like those guys are holding their own, like, relatively. So like you can never have enough of those guys, and I think if the Lakers could acquire that type of player at this deadline and it's a clear fifth starter, that might even get DA playing more consistently or better on the defensive end, or just sort of lock some of the pieces into place. So I think that's still the number one priority for me. But if you can't get that guy and it's more of like a bench piece and not as like much of a game changer, that's where I think you could potentially shift the focus to, can we get that center of the future?
I 100% agree with you, Ovan. I think flat out, if you classify them as role players to remove stars, so many star small forward or star center, if you were just ranking like role player starting threes or role playing starting fives, I think Herb is higher on that list among other forwards compared to Claxton. So I would agree. I also think that to the point that Jovan is making, like, we have a better option at the center rotation right now than we do at the small forward rotation. So like, I think I would approach it in that order. Like, if you call New Orleans and they tell you to F off, then I think I start looking at Claxton.
Yeah. Yep. That's where I'm at as well. I'd prefer that. And we're not a surprise. We're in agreement, but I would definitely target the wing first, go there. And then if you can't find that, that's where maybe you pivot in order to upgrade. I think it is more difficult to find that wing player this summer to check that box with whatever kind of flexibility the Lakers will have. And I think some of their activities at this year's trade deadline will be some form of pre-agency, which would mean giving up some of the expiring contracts in order to land a player who does have a contract that goes past this year. So that can eat into their flexibility. There's a lot of questionables there on the roster in terms of what's Ayton going to do with his option, what's Smart going to do with his option, what happens with LeBron, when is Austin Reeves coming? You know, there's a lot to try to project what the Lakers' total cap situation will be. But still, I think there is the potential for the Lakers to have a degree of significant spending power this summer, and finding that big on the market, I think, would be an easier task than trying to find the wing player. So if I had a choice between the two, I'm taking the wing and then trying to figure out the center position this summer. That said, it's possible, very possible, that wing simply is not available or not available at a price that the Lakers want to pay. And then maybe you do turn towards the big position, try to check that box, and then see what you can piece together this summer at the wing. Guys, we do need to get into some of our chat questions and comments, get this to be a bit more interactive here. But first, I want to give a shout out to our sponsor for today's show, and that is Underdog. We certainly do appreciate them. So let's give them a little bit of love here. Hey, California residents, Underdog is out here giving you more ways to play. You already know their player picks pick higher or lower on player stats. Now prediction markets are live for you. You can now pick spreads, totals, or game outcomes, combined with player picks for bigger payouts. New customers play $5 on fantasy, get $75 in fantasy bonus entries when you use our code COLLECTIVE. Team picks, player picks, all on Underdog. And don't forget, use that promo code COLLECTIVE, play $5 on fantasy, and get $75 in fantasy bonus entries. Big thank you to Underdog for sponsoring our show. All right, let's get into some of our chat questions and comments. Again, big thank you to Underdog. Let's go here. Eaton doesn't solve last year's center problem in the playoffs. So that was one of the big questions over the summer. We said going into last summer that the Lakers have to get a center. We saw what happened with Jackson Hayes in the middle against Minnesota. Do the Lakers still have the same problem if they ran into a Minnesota, San Antonio? I know, Jason, I think you kind of just answered that when you talked about DA and what would happen if you were matched up with a Jokic or a Wemby in a playoff seven-game series.
I don't think it would go well, but I think both Jackson and Ayton are better than last year's Jackson. Meaning, like, I think it's possible mm-hmm. they'd at least be able to get some minutes. Like, guys, last year they literally could not play a center. So, like, this is – I think it's just that Ayton would get his ass kicked, but I don't think necessarily that he'd be unplayable. Here's the thing, like even last night, there's a certain like screen and roll value with Ayton that has a high floor. That like it's the defense and the rebounding and the finishing in traffic. Sometimes it can get tricky, but he provides a certain floor to the pick and roll game.
Yeah, I agree with that. And what's interesting too is when we look at like the last stretch for DA, and people will say, well, the Lakers aren't getting him involved enough. He may not be getting as many high-value looks as we're seeing defenses really dive onto his role, and they're giving up the open shooters instead. He's actually receiving more passes per game right now over the last 10 games than he did in the stretch prior to that. It's two or three more passes per game that he's receiving compared to the prior stretch where he looks so much better. So it's not like they aren't involving him at all, but I do think those high value touches are a bit more limited for him, but there is still that pick and roll option with him. He's also weirdly the little 15 foot push shot that was just automatic in the month of October and November, that has dropped off. That percentage has fallen off significantly. He hasn't gotten as many of them either, but when he's taken that shot, he has not hit it nearly as often as he was to start the season. But there is value to how he runs the pick and roll on the offensive end. I think the Lakers can still unlock some of that, and that's an important thing for their offense to at least have as an arrow in the quiver here as they get into the postseason. Let's go here. I'm at a point where I've beat up Dalton so much, like I'm starting to feel bad. Dalton is making progress on defense, but the shooting has been unreliable. Should JJ give him more minutes, or is trading him the best option? Jovan, I've been saying that.
Definitely
not more minutes. I feel like there are teams around the league right now that may look at Dalton and say, he's on the books for $4 million next year. We don't want to pay him that. Like they would ask you to give them something to take Dalton.
I think he's on the JHS trajectory on potentially being out of the league soon. I think he might, just because of being a top 20 guy who had a nice month last season, like get another shot. But after he is under contract for next season, he might get like a minimum deal after that. But he to me is more of like a minimum, like two way type player right now. And I even think that the making progress on defense is like, yes, he's taken charges in back-to-back games. The first time in his professional career, he's taken charges, which, I mean, I guess it's progress, but he also was consistently targeted last night, beaten off the dribble repeatedly, beaten around screens. Like, he did not have a good defensive performance last night. And then he's also my probably second least favorite player archetype, which is a shooter who can't shoot. And like this guy who is billed as a top 1% shooter in the NBA by JJ is not even, I'd say, a top 10% shooter in the NBA right now in terms of like 3-point shooting. Like he can get hot every blue moon, but or in garbage time. He is a garbage time all-star, but yeah, I think he's on the fast track to being out of the league if he doesn't make real progress in real. And like, this has been a golden opportunity for him to show, like Vando, right? Like Vando was DNP CD for 8 straight games and the Lakers were in this defensive rut. And JJ was like, I need to turn to Vando, give him another shot. Let's see if he can do something with this. Vando has been incredible since, you know, given a second opportunity in the rotation. Dalton has been given this opportunity and like basically done nothing with it over the last few games and been really disappointing. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think he has much trade value, if any at all. And I don't even know if attaching a second to him is really going to move the needle for anybody.
Can I give you guys a stat that'll blow your minds? So both Dalton and Jared Vanderbilt have taken at exactly 36 unguarded catch and shoot threes. Dalton's made 11 and Vanderbilt's made 14.
No.
So literally it's so bad with Dalton that like when my wife and I are watching games, she's like making comments like, who's that guy? Like when she's watching from the couch. That's never a good sign.
No, that's definitely not. I mean, where is the dude? I think I want to say he put up Jovan, you and I were at this game in New Orleans last year in November. And remember the reaction from the crowd every time Dalton caught the ball? Like in New Orleans, there was that audible groan because he was lighting them up. And I think he had 27 or something that night.
The Jazz, right?
He had the 37-point game against the Jazz, which people, it's almost become like biblical. People still reference that game. I'm like, okay, that was over a year ago. Like we can't keep holding on to this notion of who Dalton is. I mean, so yeah, he had the 37-point game against Utah. He had the 32-point performance in Denver where LA had nobody. It was all Austin and DK carrying the offense. To your point, Trevor, there was that game in New Orleans. He had 27. I mean, last year he had 720-plus point games. He has not been the same player this season and frankly has not been the same player since the trade. I feel like the trade just did something to him mentally where he has not been the same shooter. He's not had the same confidence and he's not good enough at the little things of the game. I mean, he also cannot remember a play, which is a huge issue for him. And like, I you know, I don't say that lightly. Like he really struggles to remember plays.
For the record, that was something that the people who were scouting him in the draft were like, he's not like the highest basketball IQ dude.
And it's like, if you can't, I mean, that's like a barrier for, you know, for entry for just the rotation players. Mm-hmm. Like if you're botching, I mean, even last night there was a sequence that he had 3 turnovers. He had, you know, triple the amount of turnovers than field goals despite playing 20 minutes. And he botched a play. There was a turnover and you saw JJ light into him in the ensuing timeout. And I just think there's something there that like for both sides, I've said, like, I think he needs to be traded to the like an Eastern Conference bottom dweller, small
trade
market
him,
team.
Trade him to the Jazz and say, hey, remember this guy?
Yeah. Or the Jazz. I mean, those jerseys would sell pretty well with Dalton over there. But no, why? I mean, like, I mean, the Charlotte trade, I think, is like a sliding doors moment of his career where I think if he ends up in Charlotte, like that maybe is a completely different career trajectory. But agreed. Like, I mean, go back to, I mean, he played terrible at summer league. He was terrible in the preseason. He just has not been not looked good. I don't really know how else to frame it.
He's a shooter that can't make shots, Jovan. You put it perfect. It's like literally the most frustrating thing. Like the dude that's what he's out there for, you know?
Now, I don't know that I totally buy that it's just the trade broke him. Post-trade, he had a 32-point game against Denver. That was the game that Austin and Dalton almost won the thing. Had 19 against Brooklyn, had 19 against like when he got that opportunity when LeBron got hurt in March last year, he did something with it. But it was after that. I don't know if it was just like the effects of the trade took longer to sink in or something. But it's been a bit that Connect has looked like a playable guy. And that's part of why, you know, I talk about this all the time. But part of why when you look at this Lakers roster and it's felt like for years, man, why are they missing like 2 or 3 guys? Like it feels like they're short a couple players. Why? JHS. Dalton Connect. Two number 17 picks not hitting. That hurts a lot in today's NBA.
I think the other tough thing that like we recently touched on the draft misses, but the two guys they were really interested in that both fell to them, but they ultimately took Dalton, were Tristan Da Silva and Misi. And either one of those guys would they're just both much better players, but also bring a certain level of defense and I think what would be rotation guys on this team. So yeah, it's the JHS Dalton back-to-back first round drafts are brutal.
Agreed. Tough. And boy, they could, for last night when they can't score with Luka off the floor, you needed somebody, anybody to put the ball in the basket.
Oh, now no. Maybe we should do a take one before a show one time. see where things go.
The Eddie trade deadline episode.
I got one. Was it this show? I don't know. My shows are all blending together at this point. Somebody had a comment like this, and then every comment they made after that was just in all caps, and it was just like fever dream type comments. It was fantastic.
I think it might have been one of our early episodes.
Maybe it was. Anyway, here's a three-team trade. The Lakers get Wiggins, Terrence Mann, and a second from Miami and Brooklyn. So a couple of seconds, I guess. The Heat get Rui, Gabe, and the Lakers first. So the Heat are getting a first for Wiggins here. The Nets get Dalton, Maxey, and Larson. Thoughts, appreciate you. Quality hair MFers.
Brooklyn gets a lot whiter.
That is true. That is true. So do we need to replace Brooklyn with Utah?
I think that's the natural. I think I would do that.
Is it the seconds that puts it over the top, makes it okay to give up the first?
Yeah, I like getting two. I mean, you're getting 2 seconds in part for taking on the Wiggins and Mann contracts. You are now locked into some additional money next year with both Wiggins and Mann, and then the following year with Mann. But I've also thought with Wiggins, like in terms of the whole conversation with what type of fit wing or starter would like make the most sense. Like to me, Herb Jones is more in that Vando mold of being obviously more of a defensive player than an offensive player. I think he is better overall offensively than Vando. And I don't want to judge him off of his like two season worst performances against the Lakers, but he clearly is more shifted on the defensive side than the offensive side. Wiggins is more of a two-way blend, and I think about what Jake LaRavia was able to do as a setter and finisher and what he did in those Memphis games, and I'm like, if you put Andrew Wiggins in that spot and you have Luka and LeBron and Austin driving and kicking and creating for Wiggins as that weak side guy, that I think would be something really special offensively, to say nothing of like he is a certain caliber of defender, and I think would fit in nicely as that fifth starter. So I think personally I would do this. I'm also in general more aggressive with spending the first because sometimes you keep your first and you draft a JHS or a Dalton.
100% agree with you, Ovan. I think Wiggins would be awesome on this team. And I think, yeah, getting seconds and Terrence Mann back, there's a little bit of a roster spot. I think you're sending out 4 for 2 there, so they'd have to get a little tricky. But maybe I think they have they have the ability to get one buyout guy potentially. And then I'm not sure how the salaries would work out with those other deals. But
Jason, you could convert a two-way guy too. Mm-hmm.
I know you've been mostly on the side of trading for Andrew Wiggins. And I was digging a little bit in some of his numbers. It's not the hugest sample size. Combined in two seasons, we're talking about 1,500 minutes that he's played with Miami. Do you have any thoughts to why the Miami Heat have been better defensively with Wiggins off the floor and on than on both last season and this season?
That's a good question. The Heat have been tinkering with a bunch of different lineup structures over the course of the last couple of years, and they've had quite a bit of poor injury luck as well, with like guys like Norman Powell in and out of the lineup, Kelo Ware in and out of the lineup. They've had a bunch of different iterations of the team. I have zero concerns about Andrew Wiggins defensively. I think he's literally one of the top, you know, 10 to 15 primary point of attack guys in the entire league. And I also just think Wiggins is a kick-ass rebounder. And everything Jovan said about him as like a weak side attacker, as a slasher, he brings like a real slashing element. He's very active as like an inside seal offensive rebound guy that can do some real damage there. I just think Wiggins is awesome. I totally understand the hesitance about giving up a first round pick for a guy in his 30s. But like in the short term, if Wiggins was on this team, I think he just makes them way, way, way better. There's also a little bit of a redundancy with Miami, to where right now they rely on his dribble penetration a lot. So he's got a lot of offensive responsibility on this Miami Heat team that he wouldn't necessarily have with the Lakers.
Yeah, I don't think that was a number that when I looked at, I went, there's got to be an explanation, because that doesn't sound, it doesn't seem right that that would be. I don't think it's a reflection of that Wiggins is suddenly a bad, you know, defensive player or anything like that. And to your note, as a rebounder, 83rd percentile as an offensive rebounder with what Wiggins has done.
42% on unguarded catch and shoots, 40% on guarded catch and shoots. So he's a reliable, like regardless of the type of shot, he's knocking them down. 60% at the rim. That's always a really strong indicator of rim finishing. Mm-hmm. I just think Wiggins is a really good player, man. And a guy that would really help this team.
All right, let's go here. You guys are great. Thanks for your hard work. Thank you, D-Cash. Thank you, man. Appreciate it. Mamadou said, man, we need to start holding Rob responsible. Even if we get defense, we don't have depth. Why is it that Denver is missing players and they're still playing good? Yeah, you were kind of, from a Western Conference perspective, you were hoping that Denver would lose some. Not that a Lakers fan would ever necessarily feel upset about seeing Boston lose, but you kind of needed Denver to start dropping some games with Jokic out, and they found ways to get wins. And credit to them, they found ways to do it. The Lakers have lacked depth, and some of that certainly has to fall on Rob for the way the roster has been assembled, and just the, you know, nobody's going to bat 1,000, but there have been a number of mistakes that have I think added up to the lack of depth that the team has now.
Denver is going to drop a few more games. I mean, they're doing better than I expected them to, just because of how amazing Jamal Murray's been. And they've been getting a couple of contributions down their roster. Like Jalen Pickett's been unbelievable. And then a guy who was a bad contract for them, Zeke Nagy, has like suddenly been very good for them. They've been switching a ton, and he's been like kind of anchoring them as they're switching five. He had an awesome two-man game with Jamal Murray last night where he was finishing everything around the basket in the pocket. Like, they just are getting a bunch of contributions from guys that in the past have been not as good for them. So credit to them. And by the way, good teams do this. I mean, the Lakers won a lot of games with guys out of the lineup early in the season. I mean, the Lakers had wins that looked a lot like the Nuggets win in Philly, for example. Sure. I mean, I'm critical of Rob, but I don't think the Lakers have had too much trouble being competitive with guys out of the lineup this year. The last thing I would say is, like, in terms of the standings, like, I think San Antonio and Oklahoma City are going to be tough to keep up with, just because Oklahoma City's so young and they play so hard. And I know they've lost four games recently, but they've shot the ball putridly bad, and that will turn around. They will shoot better. Houston is, like, just flawed enough to drop a game every week, it seems like. And then Denver is going to lose three or four more games before the end of the month, at least, if not more. So, like, if the Lakers take care of business against this stretch of the schedule, if they bank all these wins coming up, there's potential for Austin to come back when the schedule gets tougher and for them to actually secure, you know, a top three seed. I think even as bad as they've looked, and even as much as I have my, you know, concerns about them against top tier teams, I think they are absolutely capable of getting like the third seed this year.
I think we've hit on some of the roster mistakes. I think it's been a revolving door of minimum centers outside of AD and now DA. And I think that has been a pretty bad list of centers over the last half decade, post 2020-2021. And then they've not had a quality 3-and-D wing, really, or they finally had one, and then they ended up trading him a couple months later. So, yeah, I mean, I think there's been two. He has not built very like modern rosters that fit with the way the league currently is trending, and it's been there's always like sort of a gluttony at certain positions of the undersized scoring guards, like a million power forwards on the team. I've been critical and will continue to be critical.
All right, let's go here. JB did last night change your mind at a Monk Ellis trade. Our defense hung in there. If we had literally one other competent scorer, we probably win.
Well, so, I mean, the low-hanging fruit here is if they have Austin and LeBron, I don't think you need Malik Monk in that scenario. I will say, look, if this is the best trade that the Lakers can make, and maybe you even get like a, you don't have to give up the first for, because they want a first for Ellis, or maybe you even get like a second or something in the trade as well, I'd be open to it, I guess. I just think if you are, the thing that you really have to take into account here in terms of like roster building with Monk having more time under contract, if you are saying like Luka, Austin, and Malik Monk are three of your four offensive backcourt players, and that's like part of the foundation moving forward, you need to be lights out defensively and athletically like the rest of your roster and rotation. And that's been a blind spot for LA's front office. Again, going on a half decade, they have not put together competent two-way players. They have not put together super quick and athletic rosters. So maybe in like a vacuum, you could argue that there is certainly some value to having a bench scorer like a Malik Monk type. But I think it's really tough for a player in that 6'2", 6'3 range to be in a playoff rotation if they're a minus defender. And I also just think if you're saying, hey, Luka, Austin, and Monk are like three of our core rotation guys, okay, then everyone else better be like 6'7" and above and reasonably athletic and like good defensively. Otherwise, if you have if you have Gabe Vincent in there already, I'm concerned, right? Or if you have even Rui in there, now you have another offensive minded forward who's a minus defender, that concerns me. So you need like a very specific roster build if you're going to commit to like a Luka, Austin, Monk backcourt. And I have some skepticism that LA could properly fill out the rest of the group.
I do think there's something to be said about a depth of ball handling. I just don't think it's as big of an issue as the defensive personnel and athleticism. So for example, like I was watching the Knicks last night and they blew out the Clippers in this like late third quarter, early fourth quarter run without Jalen Brunson on the floor. And it's because they had, you know, you've got Tyler Kolek out there, you've got Jordan Clarkson out there, you've got Deuce McBride out there. And there's like this thing with the Knicks where like they've got six dudes who can like really handle the ball on the perimeter. And that's one of their strengths rosters from a roster standpoint. Like that's the thing. Like if you told me right now, just like if you could just swap Gabe for Malik Monk and nothing else changes about the team, are the Lakers better? Of course. Like it's an extra ball handler, it's more firepower, it's all those things. It's just, to Jovan's point, it's just, it's a luxury on this particular team relative to the other needs that they have.
And what it does is it limits your ceiling. It limits your ceiling if you go and spend on a Malik Monk. Do they win last night's game? Maybe. They might. But Malik Monk is a bit more superfluous when you have LeBron and Austin Reeves. What you need is pieces that are going to complement those guys. And you say, well, but LeBron and Austin were out last night. Sure, but let's face it, when you go to the playoffs, if LeBron and Austin are out, you're not going anywhere anyway. Malik Monk's not going to change that. So you don't want to add a piece just in case some of your other guys are out that would be nice to have. What you need to do is to add pieces that can magnify and enhance what it is that you've got if everybody is healthy. Because if you don't have your guys healthy, it's not going to matter that much anyway. So I like Malik Monk as a player. I just don't think he's the fit for what the Lakers need. Now, if you told me he was an expiring contract, sure, why not? You know, it's not costing you much there, but he's not. He's under contract for multiple years now going into the future. And that's part of why Sacramento has had such a hard time moving him, even when they've been trying to, because teams don't want to take on that future salary. And I think that specific skill set is too finding itself devalued around the NBA in terms of the guys who are really just a sixth man microwave scorer type player, as Cam Thomas knows. All right, Mamadou said, also, we can't even completely retool because of these damn player options. If you're negotiating with the Lakers and you're negotiating a deal and you don't ask for a player option, you are missing out because that's the low hanging fruit with the Lakers right now. It is player options. They are very happy to give those up. And
Maybe you need to trade Ayton. Ayton might be like, I am a Laker next year.
Actually. If Ayton picks up that $8 million player option, would you just say, cool, we've got a guy at the center position that provides more than $8 million worth of value? Or would you go find another big and say, cool, now we've got an $8 million backup?
Well, I mean,
you probably trade
pouting about not getting enough touches. I don't know if he's going to be cool with coming off the bench.
Exactly.
The pouting about not getting touches thing is so ridiculous. What a loser to say something like that, man. Come on.
Well, I also think it's funny just because when he was first signed, there was the whole like him saying that he didn't care about touches or points and that he knew he was sort of at a crossroads with his career and he wanted to just buy in, do all the dirty work. And I think he has had plenty of performances where he has bought in and done the dirty work. So I don't want to act like he hasn't. And he's certainly been a positive value on his contract, but he also has had plenty of stinkers against some of these big matchups. And for it to then be sort of justified by JJ as like, well, he hasn't been getting the ball, so like it's understandable he would lose his motor. Like I think you can still play hard and like play hard and pout, right? Like play hard and be like, hey, I'm not getting the ball enough, but I'm still going to rebound. I'm still going to rotate defensively. I'm still going to protect the rim. But to like not do those things and then turn around and be like, well, I'm not doing this because I'm not getting the ball. It's like that's just not the right mentality, in my opinion.
It's okay for Shaq to say things along the lines of, you got to feed the dog if you want him to guard the porch. DeAndre Ayton's not Shaq. He can't say that stuff. That's not where he needs to be at. Trades should be what we have now, not what we lost. Do you guys know what that's referencing?
I'm not sure.
I'm a little confused.
Thank you for the super chat, though.
All right, let's go here. Maybe BT can expound upon that a little bit. We lack liquid assets. Can't let expirings go without extracting any value. Would you flip Rui for picks if a 3-and-D player isn't available? We've talked about that on recent shows about would you sell on Rui rather than be the team to give him, say, after the trade deadline. Let's say you could extend Rui. That could be an option. Or before the trade deadline, do you trade him? I think that's an interesting conundrum for the Lakers. I don't think, because that sends a very different message to LeBron James, right? About what the team's intentions are this year and the rest of the team, dude. Luka as well. Luka is going to be 27. Do you want to send the message that, okay, we're selling on talent. We're going to be looking ahead to next year. Cause that's really what you're saying. If you make that move, is we're probably not going to be making any kind of a run this year, or is it just getting best value? I don't know. Where do you guys go with that?
I think they have to leave this trade deadline having moved Gabe and Maxi. I look at those two guys as like, unless they're committing. Well, I don't think they're going to commit to Max. Like if Maxi's back, it's because Luka loves him. They have a great rapport and I think he'd be back as like a minimum guy in that scenario. But I think just with that collective, like 22 plus million, you have to turn that into either a better rotation piece, potentially also on an expiring, but then you obviously have to attach an asset to sort of offset getting a better player, or to potentially take on the extra money that then you maybe even get an asset depending on who the player is or how much more time they have left. So I just think you can't leave this trade deadline not extracting more value out of the expirings. Unless you know you have a certain plan in free agency and you've back channeled it and you know it's going to happen, which, you know, is of course illegal, but that's how these things tend to go sometimes. Right. Unless you have that and you know something's happening in the summer, I think you have to flip some of these. Now, Rui is its own thing because I think there will be some, if they don't trade him, there will be a real consideration there as to potentially extending him before his extension deadline. So I think Rui is a guy the Lakers don't want to trade and is a guy who the Lakers are high on internally. But outside of Rui, looking at Gabe, looking at Maxey and even looking at DK, who technically has one more year, but I think is clearly losing trade value. My goal, if I'm Rob Pelinka, at a minimum, like ideally it's swing for the fences, get the big addition, get the game changer, trade the first round pick, whatever. Mm-hmm. But if you can't do that, you need to flip these expirings and not have it be another Mo Bamba, Malik Beasley situation where you just let these guys leave for nothing and you don't capitalize on those assets.
Yeah, agreed. I think you need to take the pre-agency approach. Spend your summer money now, because frankly, even if they have $55 million, there's probably not $55 million worth of good players out there to spend it on over the summer that you're really going to get that's going to pivot this team in the way that you want to. You could run into a situation where if you've got all that money to spend, you know, if LeBron, the rest of his season goes great, LeBron says, cool, I've been great, give me $50 million. And then, okay, there goes all your spending power there anyway. So, I don't know what the future is going to hold with LeBron James, but I do think they need to flip some of these expiring deals, like Jovan said, do what they can to add pieces now by using some of their summer flexibility. Doesn't have to be all of it, but you need to at least use some of it in order to go make some moves in the present. Now, it's got to be the right move. I'm not saying do something just to do it, but that's the ideal situation there for the Lakers. Try to add some stuff to this roster now, and don't worry about having the maximum amount of cap space. Unless, like you said, you know, suddenly, you know, surprise, this top flight free agent is going to join the Lakers over the summer or something like that. Let's go here. D.A. Rui, Dalton Connect from Maxey, Gabe, get back Agbaji, Green, Claxton, Sharp. That's a lot of moving pieces there. Claxton helps clean up at the rim and gives us a lob threat to Luka. Trade also gives us a wing and use Green's contract in the summer expiring. I mean, you're talking about multiple trades there to try to get something like that done. You'd have to see what the rest of this is going to all of these teams.
There's two clock. Oh, no, I thought for a second he had two Claxtons in there. I was like, is there a second Claxton? there was no great period at the end of that.
Unless it's like Speedy Claxton or something.
Shout out Speedy.
Yeah, this is going to be the last one.
Is that Javonte Green? I really like Javonte Green. Yeah. He's the example.
But that's perfect example. Three different teams.
Right. The issue you're running into.
Javonte Green is an example of what we were talking about in that pod like 2 weeks ago, and you're saying like what kind of guys are out there. Like, that guy was a minimum contract this summer. Athletic defender.
So this is the kind of thing that you should be looking to do, but trying to figure out all the moving parts in this is kind of tough. Mm-hmm. If you get Green, Agbaji, yeah, these are the types of players you should be targeting. And De'Ron Sharp is a, you know, interesting young big. You know, gives you three bigs. I mean,
it's a big bet on Agbaji to be like a starting level wing, I guess, mm-hmm. right? Or if you are viewing the rotation as like restructured or whatnot, mm-hmm. with maybe like Jake or Marcus as the fifth starter and Rui as a bench guy, I guess you're swapping in bench player for bench player, but. Mm-hmm. I do really like Agbaji. It sounds like he's available, so that might be someone they could target realistically.
I like Agbaji too.
All right, let's wrap it up there. Appreciate everybody for coming in, joining the show. Super chats that we didn't get to, I am right now going through the process of saving them, so I will address those before we get to our next show. The Lakers take on the Bucks tomorrow. We'll see what they can do there. We do have, of course, trade season heating up every day. We've got February 5th, the trade deadline coming up. So make sure you do subscribe to the channel. You know, we're going to break down everything here for you guys. Appreciate all of you who have joined us so far. Jovan, Jason, thanks for being here. And Jovan, thanks for gutting it out despite being sick.
Of course.
Hell yeah, dude. Toughness.
Shout out to the chat.
Let's go.
We'll see you guys on Monday. Shout out to the chat. Sorry. Thank you guys for supporting us. And as always, I enjoy working with you guys. So we'll see you on Monday.
Thanks, everybody. We'll see you.